Welcome to My Opening Line. I'm Keith and the Girls, Keith Malley.
And I'm Chemda.
We talk to comedians and actors about their first times, their what was going through their head when they said the corniest shit they've ever thought they'd never say on stage. You know what I mean?
And then they continued on, even after their terrible first set.
And for them to be a guest on this show, obviously it's okay. Thank God they continued on.
Yeah.
But some of these stories, I don't know how they didn't kill themselves, you know? Today's guest performs at Caroline's, The Comedy Cellar. Those are the big ones in New York, right? Featured on HBO, Rolling Stone, won the NBC competition Stand Up for Diversity.
Spoiler alert.
Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, John Laster.
That's the crowd.
Oh, I didn't know if they were snoring or cheering.
I thought you were trying to say my name. So, it's very interesting.
That's the crowd in the background.
So let's get...
They're all Jews.
Let's get right to it. What gets you excited about stand-up? Seeing it on TV, seeing bad comedians, seeing good comedians.
What drew you in?
What told you, hey, I'm going to get out of this fucking gang-banging Denver. I'm not exaggerating.
Hey, you know what? It was Def Jam.
Yeah?
Yeah, watching Def Jam. Because, you know, prior to Def Jam, you know, comedy was almost like in the movies, Eddie Murphy, and, you know, that was about it. But, yeah, so Def Jam. Once I saw Def Jam, I was like, oh, my God, if all these guys could do it, I could probably get something off. And I was always the funniest guy in the locker room. So right. Def Jam was the thing that made me believe that
you were the funniest naked guy.
I was always the funniest naked guy in the locker room.
Were you comfortable telling jokes while you were naked in the locker room?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to think so. I hope so. Yeah.
When I look back, I'd like to think that I was very comfortable.
Yeah. My job is to distract them from my balls in their face.
Yeah.
And if I mean, can do that.
If you're uncomfortable, then there's something weird going on in your locker room. Mm. If you're uncomfortable being naked, then something is not right in there.
What I remember from Def Jam is the comics tearing the audience apart. Like, you don't wear a stupid puffy jacket in the audience, or you're dead.
Yeah.
Right?
You were dead. Yeah.
Were you good at that kind of comedy?
I mean, that's where it all started. That's why I know I'm going to get in trouble for this, but I've just not ever been a big fan of roast battles. It's like, oh, let's go back to, like, that's where we started. Like, why are we going back there?
We did that in Def Jam days.
Yeah.
Like, we evolved.
We evolved. And now you're going to devolve and call it something new. Like, really?
Right.
Is that what we're doing now?
Would you ever...
Next, there'll be like a Your Mama... Oh, wait, there was a Your Mama battle. Like, right? Your Mama jokes?
Would you ever compete in a roast battle?
I did it once. I lost horribly. First of all, I didn't know that we were writing like a bunch of jokes. So I show up. It's me and my boy, Mark DeMeo, who's hilarious, right? So we're going at each other. So they were like, okay, so the next round, I was like,
Round.
Well,
I said, this guy's a motherfucker.
Right. I just slice and dice this guy. So we go into the second round. He goes into his back pocket, all joking aside. He pulls out three pages of notes. And I was like, have I been set up? Like, what the fuck is that? And goes on with this barrage of jokes that he wrote. So then I just started, you know, snapping. You know, I went back to, like we just said, I devolved into... Everybody was laughing, but the jokes, the judges picked him. And my buddy Emilio, who owns New York Comedy Club, was like, oh my God, John, they loved you. We got to do this again. So I turn and glare at him, and he was like, okay, never mind. We're not doing this anymore. No, we're not, bro. He brought me back a couple of times as a judge. But
yeah, when you see a black person in the roast battle or a woman in the roast battle, you know where some of the jokes are going to start. And I wonder, is this good? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
It's just going to be a slavery joke.
You gotta have thick skin, though. I mean, if you know you're going into a roast battle, you know what I mean? There was one time there was some shit online that I checked, and some people were like, whoa, John got heated. This guy had like a Klan hat. Yeah, at a fucking, on some roast thing. I wasn't even there. Obviously, I fucking slapped whoever it was, but.
Oh, he wore a Klan hat in the roast battle.
And pulled out a noose.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Hilarious.
Yes. Yeah. So that, to me, that's a bit too far. Like, don't do that. You know what I mean? Again, because that conjures up visceral shit. Now, sure. If I slap you, then I'm wrong, you know? But if I slap you before I think about it, then, you know, that's your tooth loss.
Why don't you just put on Birth of a Nation?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. We're not, and I'm not playing them games with you. You know what I mean? So you you should consult one of your black friends and make sure it's safe before you do some dumb shit like that.
Right. So from studying Def Jam, when you start doing comedy, are you confused thinking, well, I guess I just attack the audience? Or do you
No. I came with some material. Yeah, some platinum material.
Some people, after doing this show, you learn that it takes comedians some time to realize, oh, people rate this stuff down.
Yeah.
Did you know right away?
Well, I knew to come, you know, with some jokes prepared because I had actually been going to the Boston where my buddy, who I work with in the cellar, this guy, Wilson Vince, hilarious dude. Him and a buddy of mine named Talent used to host a show down there on Sundays. So I'd been going down there for weeks trying to get on. Like every Sunday I went for like 2 months. Then, we'll put you up next. And I would just keep going. So I'd seen like tons of great, great shows. I mean, some of the best comedians on earth down there.
And you're watching them doing the same set. So you know that this is a set. It's not, they're not making it up on the spot.
Yes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I came with my jokes and they had what was called the New Jack segment at the beginning of the show.
New Jack segment.
Okay. They put up three, you know, new people. And I was one of the people that went up for my first time. And
how much time did they give you?
I think back then they gave you 3 minutes in the New Jack segment. And if they had seen you a couple times, but you were still in the New Jack segment, I think you could get up to five.
Okay.
But it was usually like 3 minutes that you would get.
Is it starting out? Is that not enough time? Is it the
3 minutes
amount?
Is 3 minutes like someone pushing you out of an airplane and you trying to hang on to the wing for 3 minutes.
Okay.
It's a long time.
It's all context.
It's all relative, bro. Right. It is all relative. Just imagine trying to grip that wing and not fucking fly off into space for 3 minutes. That's what 3 minutes is like when you are new.
Yeah, sometimes we do a Keith and the Girl stand-up show where people's favorite guests from this show, Keith and the Girl, do Keith and the Girl material for 2 minutes. And these professionals forget sometimes you have to plan material and they're done in 20 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
Literally looking at their watch like, oh, right.
Well, because you know what I think it is? It's the funniest part is the people who are done first are the people who are like, oh, man, I know that I hate Keith because of a couple reasons. You would think it would just kind of fly out of my mouth, you know? And they're just like, huh, Keith has no shoes on when he records. It's funny in my house. It's funny when I'm there. It's funny that I have to look at his toes, but for some reason, it's not relating.
What's the very first thing that you said at your very first show?
The very first thing I said, I remember this, is I was like, hey, you know, because, you know, I'm from Denver, so I'm fresh off the damn Frontier Airlines flight from Denver. And I'm like, yeah, you know, you guys in New York, you wear all this damn camouflage, but there's no trees here.
I see you.
Where are you hiding? Next to the subway? Crickets, bro. Fucking crickets. So I go down in flames really, really bad. And the guy before me had bombed too, right? Really bad. So
did you bomb the whole time?
Or no, the guy, I'm sorry, at the end, very end of the show bombed. Oh, I bombed that whole 2 minutes or I didn't even take the whole time. I got out of there before they even got me off stage.
He keeps trying more and more camouflage material. I see a guy in camouflage wearing an orange safety vest.
Silence. But I mean complete silence. And I remember I got off stage and there's this guy standing by the side of the stage and he says, hey man, that's your first time? I said, yeah. And he said, yo man, those jokes you did are really funny and you look comfortable up there. But I'm looking at him, you know, after the show, and being like, dude, you bombed. You suck. Like, why would I listen to anything that this fucking loser said? Right. The loser was Mike Epps.
Mike Epps, wow.
That was Mike Epps that had fucking congratulated me. But that was the first time I had ever seen him. And Mike used to be fearless. Right. So he would try shit out all the time. And then the second time I saw him, I was like, this guy's a god. That was the guy who stopped me after I went down in flames. Telling my camouflage jokes.
Well, what made you even continue? If the first time, not only did your first joke bomb, the whole set bomb, this guy you don't care about said you're funny.
Because he saw the other people that bomb keep doing it. He's like, I guess this is what we do.
You know what? The truth be told is I had made up my mind when I got on the plane, leaving Denver that I wasn't coming back under any circumstances.
Until you're a comic?
Yeah. I kind of took the same approach that I did with basketball. Like, this has to work out. You know what I mean? Right. Like, you know, going back to what we were talking about earlier, if you leave and come back, there's something about that. Anybody from the hood will tell you, like, you know, thinking that you're going to pull something off and then coming back to sit with them same motherfuckers, something about the respect level of you goes down.
Which is funny. These guys are shooting out of their car windows. They look like, John, can you not even tell a fucking joke?
But you know what? They're like, motherfucker, that's what we do. We didn't pretend to be.
Right.
Yeah. We didn't walk around with a cape on, you son of a bitch.
We're shooting great.
Right. We're great shooters. You can't even shoot, motherfucker. Your gun is rusty as shit.
So were you nervous to get on the second time?
I was paranoid. And the second time I went on stage, it was a rough crowd out in Queens. You know, I started on the hood circuit. So I did the hood circuit until very recently, until 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. And
what's that mean? The hood circuit.
There's a Chitlin circuit, man. Yeah, that's what it's called. It's called the Chitlin circuit. This is news to you guys, I see.
I'm not repeating it.
It's Keith is like, I'm not touching that. It's fucking, so it's primarily Black crowds, but there's a circuit. Like, the alt circuit is different from the club circuit. Right. You know what I mean? But it's called the hood circuit, the chilling circuit. So that's where I started. That's where I made my bones. And that second show, Will, who saw me on that first show, he also said, hey, man, you have a really good presence about you. I got this other show. I'll put you up. Come to my show on Tuesday. I think, you know, this could be for you. So I thought that was great. I was like, wow, you know, I was horrible, but this guy thought there was something there. Right. So I go out to his fucking Tuesday show, and I remember I'm bombing, and I said, hey, you guys, and the room calmed down when I said that. I said, I'm about to do an impersonation of a guy not doing good and walking off stage, right? So the crowd got quiet, and I put the mic on the stool and walked off stage. And just kept fucking walking. Yo, and by the time they caught it, yo, my boy Will walked off stage. He was like, that shit was hilarious. You know, I know he sucked before that, but God damn it, that was a great exit. Yeah.
Did you feel something different in that moment? Like, oh, maybe I should kind of relax or tell this kind of joke or be more real? Or,
no, I was still dying inside. Because you just, it's so humbling. You know, when you first start out in comedy, it is so humbling. And I had a break. My buddy, Ashy Larry from the Chappelle Show, Donnell, used to have a room in Brooklyn, downtown Brooklyn. And I remember the room that he hosted was a little more rowdy, and it was all primarily West Indian. But I remember I go on stage there one night, and this lady stood up, and she heckled me. And it wasn't like a heckle.
She stood up,
like,
to heckle.
She stood up. Mm. Right. And it wasn't like a or you suck type of, you know, where you could, oh, fuck you, you suck.
Right.
She stood up with some shit that I couldn't throw back at her, felt like. Like, she stood up and she said, fuck you, bitch.
Oh, my God.
And I didn't know what to say that. I was like, Yo, fuck you. You tripping. You stupid. And I remember Donnell comes over to me and he says, John, he said, you got to make a decision. When somebody stands up like that, either you keep going with your material or you burn them to the ground.
It's like my dad, you know, taught me how to fight.
The one good advice that he gave
you. Yeah, you fight, you rip their limbs off and eat them and shit in their parents' mouth or you walk away.
One or the other.
Yeah.
One or the other. And I remember, I'll never forget that advice. And so I start walking home. I lived in Fort Greene, downtown Brooklyn. There's a park. And I remember walking by the park, right? And out of nowhere, this torrential downpour hits me, right? I don't have an umbrella. Right? Wow.
You're a movie.
I'm walking up this dark park and this rain just comes.
And then your girlfriend calls you and breaks up with you.
I wasn't even funny enough to have a girlfriend back then.
But the trucks were splashing water on them.
The trucks were splashing water on me. And the funny part was there was like a bus shelter that I could have run to, right, to hide under. But I felt so low that I was like,
This is what I deserve.
I'm just gonna walk in this pathetic rain. But as
I am a bitch,
I am a fuck you, bitch. And so I get to the corner of this park, and it dawned on me: if this is the worst that could happen, I'm going to be all right.
Right. Sticks and stones.
Yeah. This is it.
But then I was up for 12 hours thinking of my retort.
Then I was writing fuck you bitch rebuttals for 8 hours.
I want to see like hidden camera footage of comics practicing heckler retorts in their house. Pointing to a couch and being like, really? Fuck me? I want to see where that goes.
Yeah.
When you won NBC Stand Up for a Diversity competition, that had to be a big moment.
Yeah, you know why? I think that taught me like the detachment that you need, because Eddie Murphy's uncle, this guy named Uncle Ray, was a huge fan of mine. He used to always say, hey, John, you know, you shouldn't be down on yourself, because there were times that I was down. I think we've all experienced this in our career. And he said, the right people haven't seen you. He said, whenever the right people see you, they respond. He said, I've never met anyone that saw you and didn't say, that guy's special. Right. But I happened to be down before I went to do stand-up NBC out there in L.A. In the finals. But I had told myself, go out there, because it's always a casting thing. So they're always looking for some safe-ass black dude. Or some fucking the best looking whatever they can find. And I know I don't check that box. So I go out there, give it all you got, and get off stage, which is exactly what I did. I remember the next day, Gina Brion, who was my co-winner, were standing in the parking lot because we had to meet with the executives the next day, casting and whatever. And she said, who do you think won the competition? But I remember thinking, I hadn't even thought about it. I literally gave it everything I had and completely walked away from that competition. And that to me was bigger than the actual win, because I learned that, like, you can't, or this business will eat you up.
Right.
If you let everything drag you down.
You know you did your best, that's it.
Oh yeah, and that was it. And,
is that you said to her?
No, I just said, I have no idea. And I genuinely didn't give, hadn't thought about it, two, didn't give a fuck. But then to win a national competition that you know that they're, the bullshit that they're looking for. And as soon as I landed, Uncle Ray called me and said, I told you.
Right.
In the room with the right people. And they responded.
Hey, by the way, switching gears real quick. What do we think of Eddie Murphy, him not doing stand-up anymore? And I have a theory that other people wrote his stuff, and he can't ask people to write his stuff now because obviously it would get out there in a second. Or is he just nervous he's going to ruin a legacy? Or is he so rich he doesn't care, which I really can't believe.
I know from people who know him that have sat in the room talking, and it's legacy. That everyone that I know that's talked to him said that it's legacy. But you got to keep in mind, again, Eddie was pre-Def Jam. Like, can you imagine how much comedy has come into the fray since him? So if he comes back, then he's going to want to be remembered as this.
Right.
You know what I mean? And to produce that, which I personally...
Well, he was also pre-adult. He was a kid.
Yeah.
Very true.
Yeah.
So you're talking 25 probably years since Delirious or Raw. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you take a 25-year gap that was filled in by some pretty funny motherfuckers.
Wow, it might even be 30 years, right? I'm gonna look that up.
Oh, easily. What? He wasn't older than 18.
No, he was very young, coming off of SNL.
Yeah.
Going and doing Delirious. And again, he was out in space, though, when he was doing those. We weren't represented like that. There weren't a lot of black comedians that you could look at and be like, he had his own lane.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and to be perfectly honest with you, if somebody could come back and do it, I think he could, which is a weird thing to say.
There's so much stuff to talk about. Movie star, him picking up the transvestite in Hollywood.
But I mean, not only that, like Eddie is one of the only guys, like as a comedian, like most of the time we've been doing this for a long time, people get less impressive because we know how the rabbit comes out of the hat. Mm-hmm. Eddie, to me, after all this time, has become more impressive. This guy can tell jokes. He can do characters, which is different from impersonating people.
Right.
He can do both. Most people people who can do characters can't impersonate. People who can impersonate usually don't tell jokes. He can do all three of those, and he can hold a note. I'm not saying that he's some great singer, but he can hold a note enough to impersonate any fucking singer that's out there now.
Right.
There's no brilliant male singers that this guy couldn't fucking catch. Yeah, I don't know. If anybody could get an hour out of all of that skill set, I think this guy could do it.
You start messing up on stage, do the clumps. My girl likes to party all the time. You'll be fine.
You'll be fine,
you know what's
bro?
Weird? I Googled Eddie Murphy Raw just to get the date on it. And first of all, it has been 30 years. And second, it says Eddie Murphy Raw, 1987, comedy/LGBT 1.5 hours. And I'm like, that's what you're calling raw? Why? Because he said no faggots should look at my ass while I'm on stage.
Wheel, wheel.
Oh, wow. What are they? They're warning the LGBT community. Is that what that is? Why is that on there?
No, I don't know. It's labeled it. It's like tagged as comedy and LGBT.
Maybe that's it.
I wonder if people consider him part of the LGBT community because he was found with a queer person. You know what I mean? Because he sleeps with.
I wonder why that's on there. You know what's funny is Raw was the second one. The first one was Delirious. So it's more than 31 years.
Right.
The second stand-up special. Mm. Raw was. You know, Delirious was one.
He starts doing a stand-up. Somebody yells out, Hollywood faggots. And he goes, no. No. You don't stop that. You stop that. That is disgusting.
Yeah. I think he could do it. So 30 years. So even way more than I thought. So maybe that's the reason. I think legacy.
Are your parents around?
Yes. My mother is. My dad's passed. I said yes. My dad died. I wasn't that close to him. You see how close I was? I said yes.
He's around like he always was.
About as much as usual. You can tell how close I was to him. I answered quickly yes.
I'll see him in my dreams again.
Right. Yeah. How did he pass away?
Cancer.
Damn.
Yeah. Fucking cancer.
What age were you? Even if he wasn't around, what age were you?
Smoked. He died fucking 34. He died 4 years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
How'd you take it?
You know what? I had come to a place where I knew that we were never going to be, you know, you can't get back all that time. So I had become really cool with him because he was sick. You know, cancer drags on for a long time. But I wanted to do everything on my part to try to have a relationship with him so that when he did die, I wouldn't be sitting around like, oh, I wish I would have, you know what I mean?
Did it work?
Oh, totally. When he died, I was like, dude, I tried to talk to him. I went to see him every other weekend upstate for a while.
Did he respond well to you?
Yeah, but he never really opened up to me. Like stuff that I would ask him, he'd be like, oh yeah, we'll talk about it later. Mm. Like he was always very, very distant with me. Unlike he was with my brother and my sister. My sister lived with him for a year. My brother lived with him for a year. He was getting married one time. I didn't even know.
That's gotta be tough. Like
he came to their high school graduations, their college graduations.
Why you?
I don't know. But that's why I tried. I was like, so that I didn't have that feeling, so that I didn't have that why me feeling. Mm-hmm. And I did all I could.
Where were you in the lineup? First, second, third child?
Middle.
Well, we just answered why you.
I guess that clears that up.
But why is it the middle? I feel like it's like astrology almost. Any slot you have, there's an excuse.
I was actually just kidding. I actually think that, and this is very common, that for some reason, some parents, and this is like I think it's a chemical thing. Something's up in their brain where one child is singled out as the person that they just can't penetrate. They just can't. Either they're like, either it is a personal thing. He just maybe sees too much of himself in you, like some weird shit like that. Or it just.
It's definitely not that.
It just kind of hit.
Everybody saw him in my brother, for sure. Mm. So it definitely wasn't that.
Were you just like very much the opposite of him?
Probably, you know.
Has he seen you do stand up
or play basketball?
Yeah, he came to Caroline's. Yeah, and he came when I played. He came down to North Carolina.
What did he say to you after Caroline?
I'm super jealous, and I wish I was you.
I don't know. I don't. He was a funny guy, but I don't know that he ever.
Did he have notes for you
after Caroline's?
Yeah.
After Caroline's is funny because he said, this is exactly what he said. He came up to me, said, oh man, it's late as hell.
It's late as hell. Sometimes those shows go on.
Yeah. It was like 12:05 or something. He walked up to me and said, it's late as hell.
Well, that's what I do, Dad.
My mom has done something like that to me. I was, I used to sing, and I was on a tour where I was like fronting the band. I was on a tour bus. I was getting paid. It was like an actual big deal. I call my mom from the bus, and then I'm like, oh, we're going into this city. What can you possibly tell your parent? And then she goes, when are you going to be done with this and get married and have a baby. And this was a while ago. So I'm paying, you know, minutes on the phone. I'm like, why am I wasting my phone minutes on you? I'm like, okay, I'm going to go.
Yeah.
And
it's so bad. You know what that reminds me of? One time I was getting fired from a job, but they were slow about it. And I had to keep putting quarters into the payphone. That's what it's
while they were firing you.
While they're firing me. So what we're trying to say is, boo, boo, boo. You owe one more quarter. And I'm like, fuck.
While they're cutting your head off. Oh, my goodness.
I was living in a hostel and just working a payphone like an asshole.
Oh, shit.
Has your mom seen you perform? Yeah, right?
Oh, man. The absolute best show of my life.
Yeah?
Best show of my life was seeing my mom in Denver. Sitting up in my brother got this theater, brought me home, but seeing my mom up there elbowing her friends and her friends swaying, best show of my life. And keep in mind, I hosted the best show ever in comedy. And that's and the best show ever in comedy is still the second best show. I hosted that $1 billion show with Chappelle and fucking Chris Rock and Aziz and Amy Schumer and Jerry Seinfeld and Yeah. So I hosted the $1 billion show, which
but mommy's the best.
Yeah, seeing mom that was unbelievable.
Does she ever think about, hey, you could easily have stayed in Denver, you easily could have joined your friends doing gang activity and just break down and cry?
Does she?
In good news.
Does she?
Yeah, does she?
I'm sure she has. Not in front of me though.
Okay.
But you know, like with the comedy thing, you know, when I first came in and you guys said, well, she's supportive. You know, knowing what was going on around us, I'm sure she's like,
yeah, do whatever. Anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Study whales. Get the fuck out of here.
Fucking study whales, bro. Yeah. You know, as long as it's not where you could have, because, I was a troublemaker. Young, I got kicked out of elementary school for fighting. I flunked out of high school. They only let me back in because I was my coach. The coach that was there left. The coach that was coming in, who is the most father figure guy that I know, high school coach.
Wow.
Yeah, a little Jewish guy. But I really feel like when someone says your dad, that's who I think of. But in his contract was that they had to let me back in the public schools if he was going to take the job.
Wow, in his contract.
Yeah, so that's how I stayed in public schools. They had Congrats. They let me back. I was already kicked out of high school, but they were like, you know, this guy wants him back in. He says he's going to get it done.
Yeah, but then when you're finishing high school, are you like, why? I don't want to be here. Why? Oh my God, trust me, if I don't learn math, I'll still know how to split a pizza pie with friends. Good shit.
That wasn't going to happen. Well, by the time I was on my way out, they thought I was going to the NBA. So,
okay.
Are you still in touch with that coach?
The gamble were, oh God, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. He was at the wedding. We hung out.
Do you go to Rosh Hashanah
all
dinner?
The time? No. Yo, he's such a fake fucking Jewish motherfucker.
Aren't we all?
Right? Yeah. So I fucking come to his crib, right? One time, right? When we first got to high school. And I was like, yo, I thought you were Jewish. Right? He's got this big ass Christmas tree up. Right? He said, ah, man, that's a Hanukkah bush.
The triangle Hanukkah bush.
Fucking fake ass Jewish motherfucker.
Instead of you know, 8 lights, I have 600. It's all the same. Anytime you get a chance to see John Lasseter perform, go and do it. And now that you're an actor, which is more exciting to you? Stand up or acting?
You know what? Acting is picking up, man. I just joined Esper Studio.
Congrats.
Yeah. Buddy of mine recommended and made a phone call and got me in there. Thank you, Amy Schumer. She's going to be mad I did that because she doesn't like me telling people some of the cool shit she does for me. But
that's her little trick. She loves it.
She fucking loves it. So yeah, I'm an acting class and I love it. I didn't think I would love anything like her. I'm addicted to it now. Right. It's the best shit ever, man.
What advice would you give John Lasseter specifically? What do you wish you personally knew?
If I could have told me, younger me back then, I would have told me that, you know, because oftentimes we're out and we're wondering if we're going in the right direction. That's the toughest thing to do is am I getting where I want to go? But if I could tell the younger me, I would tell me that you know exactly where you're going and where you're going to be by what your daily habits are.
Okay.
You know, if somebody slid me a piece of paper with their daily habits, I can almost tell you where your station is in life. You know,
what's the best daily habit you have going?
Probably my spiritual practice, because it keeps me in the right frame of mind. I'm a huge law of attraction person, so I meditate and try to stay in the right frame of mind. But that, I don't know, that frees you up to do anything. You know, of course, I'm working out. I'm on stage every night. You know what I mean? Those are things that I'm doing every single day too. Mm-hmm. But I think without the right mindset, you could be doing what looks like the most. I know some miserable comedians. Uh-huh. I mean, we have a beautiful job. So if you're not in the right frame of mind, and I have friends that are very, very rich, but they're unhappy.
Uh-huh. Well, namaste, bro.
Yeah, right. Namaste. Yeah. Uh-huh. So, yeah, but I would say, I would tell a younger me, just watch your habits. Your habits will tell you the whole story in one day. And the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day. Yeah, your habits are fucked up. And then a lot of times people got fucked up habits and wonder why they are where they are.
That's right. You hear that, Eddie Murphy? Come on, bro.
Get it together.
John, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And now the closing theme song. What you just heard was my opening line. Please subscribe and tell your friends. Go to myopeningline.com.